Someone is raising Srila Prabhupada. Coming very soon is the wonderful opportunity for all of us to celebrate Srila Prabhupada's 100th anniversary of his divine appearance within this material world. He came out of his infinite desire to surrender to the desire of the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna. As an agent to distribute to the whole world the most precious gift of Krishna Prema, as was originally taught and inaugurated by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In the age of Kali Yuga, Krishna Prema can be understood and experienced through the congregational chanting of the holy names. 5,000 years ago, approximately, when Srila Vedavyas compiled the Vedic literatures, the four Vedas, the 108 Upanishads, the Itihastas, the Mahabharata, the 18 Puranas, he was still dissatisfied. Until Sri Narada Muni explained to him that you have not yet given the essence in exclusive literature describing pure unalloyed devotional service to Radha Krishna in Vrindavan. So the commentary of the essence of all the Vedas, the Vedanta Sutra, was written in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is the last word, the grand finale of all knowledge as presented by Srila Vedavyas. And the grand finale, the last sloka of Srimad Bhagavatam, Nama Sankirtanam Yasya Sarva Papa Puranashanam. That in this age of Kali Yuga, through the congregational chanting of the holy names and offering humble service to Sri Krishna, all one's sins are removed and one can achieve the perfection of life. This is the conclusion of all knowledge. To congregationally chant in the association of devotees the holy name of Krishna. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who was Krishna himself, he came to practically demonstrate through his life and words how one can live according to the principles of the essence of all scriptural understandings. He appeared in Sri Navadvip Dham, and there, along with his associates, headed by Nityanand Prabhu, Gadadhar, Advaitacharya, Srivas Thakur, and others, he taught the chanting of the holy names of Krishna, Maha Mantra, and practically tasted the supreme ecstasies of love of Krishna through this process. When he left this world, his divine associates, especially the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, Rup Sanatan, Raghunath Das, Raghunath Bhat, Gopal Bhat, and Jiva Goswamis, they practically demonstrated and wrote so many literatures in order to further exemplify and apply the principles of Lord Chaitanya and very strongly establish everything he taught on the basis of Vedic evidence. After Rupa and Sanatan, Jiva Goswami gave the order to Srinivasa Acharya, Narottam Das Thakur, Shamananda Prabhu, and others to widely disseminate the literatures of the Goswamis and practically demonstrate the teachings of Lord Chaitanya through their life and teachings. In this way, Gaudiya Vaishnavism took roots and began to spread throughout India. Over the ages, great purified descendants of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu preserved the original essence of his teaching, his full-fledged mercy. But also, as the age of Kali Yuga is a time of great quarrel and hypocrisy, there was much misrepresentation of the original truths of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So the Lord, out of his infinite mercy upon all the fallen, rebellious souls addicted to sinful life, even in the name of religion, he sent one of his most confidential associates, Sri Thakur Bhaktivinod, who revived in the eyes of the public the original true teachings of Sri Chaitanya. But Bhaktivinod, knowing that these teachings are meant not only for a small class of Babaji's or sadhus in Vrindavan and Navadvip, but for all classes of men throughout the world, while living in Puri, he prayed for one of the personal associates of the Lord to appear to help him within this mission. And it was there in Puri Dham that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur appeared, descending from Sri Goloka Vrindavan, to take the nectar of Mahaprabhu's teachings, as taught by Bhaktivinod, and establish a veritable preaching force, an army of empowered Vaishnav preaching soldiers. He established over 64 Gaudiya Mats. He initiated tens and thousands of disciples. But it was his dream. Although he spread Mahaprabhu Sri Chaitanya's teachings throughout India, that it go to every corner of the world. It was the prophecy of Nityananda Prabhu and Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu, and it was the prayer of Bhakti Vinod and Bhakti Siddhanta that this take place. And out of his infinite causeless compassion to all fallen souls in this age of Kali, and out of reciprocation for the pure, unalloyed prayers of these great souls, His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, was personally sent by Krishna to appear within this material world. It will be 100 years from next year. Srila Prabhupada took the mercy of Mahaprabhu, the very conclusion of all Vedavyasa's teachings, and taught it in such a practical and wonderful way that even the most uncultured, sinful living entities in the whole creation can become purified, jubilant Vaishnavas, perfect their lives, and not only that, but distribute that same perfection to others. This was the special, unique, empowered commission of Srila Prabhupada in this world. Srila Prabhupada ki. His Holiness Giriraj Maharaj and myself were just speaking just a short while back of how Srila Prabhupada so expertly, so ingeniously began his preaching in the Western world. The ninth offense to the Holy Name is to preach the glories of the Holy Name to the faithless. And in the Western world, everyone is faithless. So how could he preach the glories of the holy name without committing offenses? But what Srila Prabhupada did is by his own divine personality, he was so kind, he was so loving, he was so genuinely compassionate, he took such special, genuine concern for everyone that came into his life, that people simply loved him and people trusted him. First, he developed their love and trust in him as a person by his just giving, compassionate nature. And once they had trust in him, they were no longer faithless. Then when he preached the sublime philosophy of Mahaprabhu Sri Chaitanya and the holy name, their heart was already fertilized by his association in such a way that the seed of that knowledge took root. And then he personally watered it and made these most, unlikely candidates into the most wonderful, dedicated, committed Vaishnavas. As Malati Devi was explaining to us just the other day, how her and her friends first met Srila Prabhupada, and even when they were being initiated, they didn't even know what they were doing or what they were supposed to do. But they knew one thing, that this Swamiji is the best person we've ever met in our life, and we'll do anything for him. That much they knew. And therefore, whatever he spoke to them, they accepted. He didn't have to convince them. He already convinced them by his divine qualities, because Krishna's mercy was so much reflecting through his life that whatever he said, even if it was a philosophy which was so foreign to their whole conditioning, they just accepted it because Prabhupada said it. And we've never met anyone we could trust like him. And understand, in the Western world at that time, there was literally a civil war between generations. It was the battle cry amongst the young generation, never trust anyone above 30. And if you do, you're a traitor to our generation. And here was somebody, 70. He was double the times of 30. But the purity of his devotion and concern for their souls transcended even their own convictions. And they trusted him. And when he sent Malati and others to London, they had no money, they didn't know anybody. He told them, go there and spread Krishna consciousness in this foreign land. They went. And they performed such austerities, they were willing to do anything and everything because Prabhupada wanted it. And when he sent people like Giriraj Maharaj and others to India, they didn't know anything about Indian culture. They were living in a place infested with roaches and rats and hostile neighbors. They were falling diseased with malaria and all sorts of other terrible typhoid illnesses. But because they had such trust and faith in Prabhupada, they wanted to please him so much that they'd do anything for him. And Prabhupada very carefully trained them in the pure philosophy of the previous acharyas of Lord Chaitanya's mission, and gradually developed within their hearts the real quality by which they themselves could be gurus on his behalf and continue on this great mission. So Srila Prabhupada's appearance in this world is one of the most important significant historical events in our lives or in the lives of all living entities throughout this age of Kali Yuga. In order to deepen our appreciation for Srila Prabhupada's contribution to the world, throughout the planet, in ISKCON temples, there are regular Prabhupada nights. And these Srila Prabhupada nights are where people come together and simply try to inspire and enliven one another to have a deeper realization of the gift that Srila Prabhupada has given us all. Sometimes senior devotees who are personal associates with Srila Prabhupada just share their memories of their relationships with Srila Prabhupada. Other times there are slideshows or films or reading from Srila Prabhupada's Lilamrita or Transcendental Diary or readings from Srila Prabhupada's books. In various ways, devotees, sometimes even grand disciples, come together and just share their own realizations of how Srila Prabhupada, either through his books or through his disciples, has completely changed their lives and changed the lives of others. So what we are doing tonight is something that is going on throughout all the world. We are one wonderful part of Srila Prabhupada's wonderful worldwide family. And tonight for all of us, of course, it is very special because two of Srila Prabhupada's most dedicated and senior disciples and associates have come just to be with all of us, to share with you their own appreciations and realizations of Srila Prabhupada's mercy. So I'd like at this time to invite Sri Pancharatra Prabhu to speak. Pancharatra Prabhu is known to all of you. He's one of the most dynamic, exciting people in the entire Hare Krishna movement. I remember when I first came to a Mayapur International Festival, he was the MC for all the occasions. And whenever he would speak, whenever he would move any limb of his body, I remember my hair standing on end. He was just so genuinely excited and enthusiastic to give Srila Prabhupada's mercy to everyone and anyone. And he's been unflinchingly dedicated for so many long years. And of course, that is the most wonderful sign of love. Unflinching dedication to the service of the beloved. And Pancharatna Prabhu is also practically single-handedly coordinating the entire centennial project for all of India, which is a very, very difficult job. But he's so wonderfully determined that whoever he comes in contact with naturally joins in and tries to help according to their capacity. So tonight we're not trying to encourage any managerial plans. That is for other nights. Tonight we're just hearing and chanting the glories of Srila Prabhupada. And we'd like to welcome Pancharatna Prabhu by very loudly and devotionally saying Hari Bol. Radha Krishna should also be
Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
That's what that I was talking about.
My only qualification is a loud voice. Trained up in New York on these subways. We used to go to distribute, and the whole key to distributing books in New York on the subways is a loud voice. So that's the only qualification I have. I have to apologize for sitting here while Radhanath Maharaj describes me in so many glowing words, which are absolutely nothing to do with who I am, really. Just a very fallen, bungling along devotee of Srila Prabhupada that somehow has been very fortunate to stay within this movement for a long enough time to realize its greatness, its importance, and Srila Prabhupada's unique position by hearing from all of my wonderful God brothers. I didn't have a lot of association with Srila Prabhupada like Giriraj Maharaj and Radhanath Maharaj. But every instance where I somehow or other had an opportunity to associate closely with Srila Prabhupada, each time I felt a very important lesson was imparted, and lessons which have stayed and stuck, very much like seared in my mind and consciousness. This was Srila Prabhupada's expertise, that he could instruct us and guide us even just with a glance, without even saying anything. He could teach us something extraordinarily sublime about Krishna consciousness, because he was and is very truly a fully transparent via media of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. So most of my association with Srila Prabhupada did involve some form of embarrassment on my part. Different occasions where Srila Prabhupada would correct me for my mistakes. One of the times which I remember very, very carefully, and I have a lot of opportunity to use this particular lesson. I think it's important, and maybe we can reflect on it. In the early 70s, I started getting the idea about fundraising. I think there was this something was planted there. I don't exactly remember how. I'm still involved in that way in some way. But at that time, I was in New York City, and we had heard a lot about our food distribution programs in Mayapur and India. And Srila Prabhupada had oftentimes asked our devotees, our temples in India, in America, to send money for the food distribution, for ISKCON Food Relief, it was called at that time. And so I got the idea, why don't we try to be professional, and we'll become big fundraisers, and we'll raise lots of money for ISKCON Food Relief. But I thought that, well, people, now they probably, if they hear ISKCON Food Relief and then they see Krishna consciousness and they think Krishna, and then they might not want to give to us. So I thought, well, let's be a little subtle. So I rented a dress. At that time we were in Henry Street in Brooklyn. And Brooklyn is not very prestigious. So I rented an address on 42nd Street, Manhattan. And this is a business that they have in New York City. You can rent just a address. There's nothing else there. It's just an address. So I rented this address, and I printed some letterhead. And it said, ISKCON Food Relief, 41 West 42nd Street, or East 42nd Street. That's it. That's all it said. ISKCON Food Relief, 41 East 42nd. Or I think it even just says ISKCON. And somehow Srila Prabhupada got a copy of this letterhead. And when he visited, very shortly I found myself in Srila Prabhupada's room. And he said, "You have done this?" And I said, "Yes, I did it." He said, "Where is founder Acharya?" And I tried to explain. I didn't say anything. I just sat there. And he said, this is not good. Wherever there is ISKCON, there is International Society for Krishna Consciousness, there is founder Acharya, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. You don't do this again. Right, of course. Very seared in my mind. And ever since then, there's been many times when I've had to point out to devotees who have printing something or whatever, say, wherever there is ISKCON, there is Srila Prabhupada. Of course, we might think, why was he so concerned about us always presenting ISKCON with his name? In general, Srila Prabhupada was always kept himself in the background. You know that unlike so many other institutions, and we have here in India especially, we have so many missions. Chinmayananda Mission, Ramakrishna Mission, Shivananda, this, that. Where the founder or the principal guru is very much in the forefront, as in the name of the mission, the name of the society, very much out there. Whereas ISKCON is the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, and Krishna is there in the forefront. We're the Hare Krishna movement. And Srila Prabhupada never put himself forward like that. And yet he was so particular about this point. So we might wonder why that is. And I have, over the years, realized that Srila Prabhupada was very concerned that if we want to spread Krishna consciousness, if we want to maintain the strength of our institution and our society and our movement, we can never forget or diminish or in any way sideline Srila Prabhupada's position. Although it is below, we don't put Srila Prabhupada on top. International Society for Krishna Consciousness, then below, founder Acharya, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Prabhupada. But he is the foundation. And if you remove the foundation, then the whole thing is gone. Founder Acharya. So, although it was a small thing. In my mind, it was a small thing. I mean, I thought I was just trying to raise some money, and I thought, well, you know, people, they saw, if they saw Krishna and these strange words and so on, they might not let me in the door. With that letterhead, I went to the some big corporations, walked in, and I got appointments and so on, and nothing ever came of it. just exercise. But I was thinking like that. But although my motives, you could say, were not bad, I wanted to raise money for food relief, still, I had made this grave mistake of diminishing or sidelining Srila Prabhupada's position. And we've seen so many times in our, I mean, in our movement, many, many devotees throughout our history of our movement have allowed just little aspect, little ways. They've let the idea come. They've diminished in some ways Srila Prabhupada's preeminent position, and the results are always disastrous. So this was a lesson, small little lesson, little tiny thing. I feel now so very fortunate, although I have very little quality to be counted amongst the followers of Srila Prabhupada. I'm really just a hanger-on. But these small lessons have helped me again and again and again. Many other, well, not so many other. I didn't have a lot of other experiences. I mean, I don't have a lot to say. Giriraj Maharaj can go on for books. He's going on for books. We should all be very, very eager to get his book of Srila Prabhupada's adventure in Bombay. But my recollections, my little association were much less. But each one so very significant. And that's the nature of a pure devotee. Just by a little bit of touch, just the smallest touch. I was fortunate. I got a few times I was able to associate with Srila Prabhupada. Many of my godbrothers never, ever had his personal association, or perhaps just saw him very briefly on a Roth cart. But these moments are so precious that they touch so deeply that they are carried forever and ever. And Srila Prabhupada is still available in that way to all of us. He can touch us. And that touch, if we can pray for Srila Prabhupada's touch, it will fully transform our lives and give us the strength to keep going, no matter what, following his path. Mahajana Jaina Gata Sapantak. Practically, that is all I've learned, is that Srila Prabhupada is on the path, is heading the path, showing the path back to God, and we simply follow him, that's all we have to do. Whether we understand or don't understand, we just have to follow. So, I don't want to take much time, because I want to hear. I want to hear from my God brothers. And pray for your blessings that I may have again and again the opportunity to remember Srila Prabhupada and in that way stay enthusiastic and enlivened for spreading Krishna consciousness. So thank you very much. I'm sorry I'm not got a lot to say. I'm better when I have to stand up and make a big performance and talk about fundraising and things like that. But when it comes to these subjects, I'd rather hear. Hare Krishna. Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai!
Hearing the wonderful talks of my two godbrothers, I was reminded of some of Srila Prabhupada's instructions and activities in Bombay. The first incident illustrates what Pancharatna Prabhu said about how even a slight deviation from Srila Prabhupada or a slight forgetfulness of Srila Prabhupada's position can bring calamity. At the time, we had no permanent center in Bombay. And one old friend of Srila Prabhupada's who had helped Srila Prabhupada and the devotees in London had come back to Bombay and had offered the use of his hotel to the devotees to stay. So about six of us were staying in the Sea Palace Hotel and beginning the life membership program in Bombay when Srila Prabhupada came. And Srila Prabhupada himself also stayed overnight in the Sea Palace Hotel on the way to Calcutta and Allahabad. Srila Prabhupada had arranged that one devotee named Gurudas Prabhu should register the society in India. And in consultation with the lawyer, he did so. So when Srila Prabhupada came to Bombay, Gurudas Prabhu showed him the Articles of Association. And at the end was a list of founding members. And at the top of the list was Srila Prabhupada's name. And beside each name was a column for the address and then a column for the occupation. So the first name was A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, then some address, and occupation, sannyasi. When Srila Prabhupada saw the document, he became furious. He became furious. And he said, sannyasi? That's who I am, sannyasi? Just like a beggar on the street, I'm a sannyasi? Don't you know I'm the founder acharya of ISKCON? So Gurudas Prabhu said, yes, of course I know. Then why didn't you put it in the document? Why did you put sannyasi? Then Gurudas Prabhu said, I forgot. Srila Prabhupada became even more furious. You forgot? Can a son ever forget his father? How can a son forget his father? And then Srila Prabhupada personally drafted a clause to be added to the document specifically about the founder acharya, giving the founder acharya absolute powers within ISKCON. Although according to the Society's Registration Act, no individual is supposed to have absolute authority. But Srila Prabhupada added the clause, and it was incorporated in the document, stating that he had absolute authority in ISKCON. And actually, it is a fact. Srila Prabhupada is the supreme authority in ISKCON, and he is the absolute authority over in all matters and over all devotees in ISKCON. And if anyone tries to transgress any of the orders that Srila Prabhupada has given or any of the guidelines that Srila Prabhupada has given, he will certainly suffer. Gurudas Prabhu was quite bewildered by the whole incident. And afterward, oh, and another thing, Srila Prabhupada told him that you want to take over the society. That's why you have done this. You want to take control of the society. So Gurudas was, you know, upset and bewildered. He could not understand why Srila Prabhupada had become so angry. And especially he couldn't understand why Srila Prabhupada said he wanted to take over the society. Because within his conscious mind, he had no desire to take over the society. But we could understand from the incident, you know, how deep Srila Prabhupada was, how deep his perception was, and how merciful his anger was. Because even though Srila Prabhupada might become angry, but he always had the interest of the disciple as well as the interest of the mission in mind. He didn't want any ignorance to come in the mind or in the heart of any disciple. And therefore, to remove the ignorance or to remove the obstacle within the heart of the disciple, Srila Prabhupada would manifest transcendental anger. And sometimes Srila Prabhupada's representatives on behalf of Srila Prabhupada manifest transcendental anger just to purify the hearts of the devotees and remove obstacles that can come in the way of the devotee's spiritual progress. In Srila Prabhupada's last days, when he was staying on the fifth floor of the guest house in Juhu, disciple, because sometimes Srila Prabhupada would get angry, especially if the prasad was served late, he would become angry. And usually the personal servants were the objects of Srila Prabhupada's anger. So one of the personal servants was His Holiness Navayogendra Swami Maharaj. And he directly approached Srila Prabhupada, that Srila Prabhupada, sometimes you become so angry, we don't know what to do. We don't know what to say. We don't know how to feel. We become so bewildered. So when you become angry like that, how should we feel? And Srila Prabhupada replied, you should feel jubilant. You should feel so happy that my Guru Maharaj cares for me. And therefore he's becoming angry with me. There's so many people loitering in the streets. They have no one to care for them. They have no one to correct them if they do something wrong. But you are fortunate. You have your Guru Maharaj, and he cares for you. And if he sees that you're doing something wrong, he may become angry and chastise you and correct you. And you should feel so happy that my Guru Maharaj is there and he cares for me. When the spiritual master chastise you and correct you, and you should feel so happy that my Guru Maharaj is there and he cares for me. When the spiritual master becomes angry, we should also feel fortunate that we are, that he's looking over us and taking care of us. Although with his own disciples, sometimes Srila Prabhupada would chastise them, with outsiders, he would generally glorify them. And one incident that came to mind while His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj was speaking took place in Juhu. Maharaj was saying how by Srila Prabhupada's love and compassion, devotees became inspired to do anything for Srila Prabhupada or to give up anything for the sake of Prabhupada's service. So when we were living in the Chetai hut in Juhu, basically we had no facility at all. We just had the hut, which had some crude brick work up to about 2 feet or 3 feet. And then there was Chetai, and then the roof was tarpaulin. And the devotees used to sit and sleep on straw mats on the floor. And the floor was made of very poor quality cement. As Radhanath Maharaj mentioned, we didn't know anything when we came to India, and we didn't know how people get cheated in India. So we were probably cheated on the cement and the work. So the floor was crumbling, literally crumbling. If you stepped too hard in a place on the floor would crumble. There'd be so much dust of the cement all over. So one man who came in the early days at Juhu, was Dr. C.P. Patel, educated in England, and related by family to Sardar Vallabhai Patel. So he was, and he knew Sanskrit also. So he was quite proud of his family heritage and his education. But somehow he was moved by the devotees, by the sacrifice and surrender of the devotees. And he got the inspiration that he would provide mattresses, pillows, and mosquito nets for the devotees. And it's true, the devotees, many of the devotees got malaria, many of the devotees got jaundice and other diseases. So, although he had never begged in his whole life, he had never begged, but he went to Mulji Jetta Market and he begged cotton and cloth and all the materials required to make the mattresses and pillows, and perhaps some cover for them. And we were very few devotees. And one day, very happily, he came to Juhu with 12 complete sets of bedding for the devotees. So we were very pleased, and gradually we started to use the items that he gave us. We were not even 12 devotees then. But gradually, over the months and years, one mattress disappeared, second mattress disappeared, pillows disappeared, mosquito nets disappeared. Gradually, everything was becoming less and less. And I think within 3-4 years, there was not a trace of Dr. Patel's donation left. And he was upset because he worked hard, he humbled himself, he begged, and nothing was kept properly. Everything disappeared. So many years later, he complained to Srila Prabhupada on the morning walk on the Juhu beach. Now, Dr. Patel was a unique individual because sometimes he seemed to be a Vaishnava and other times he seemed to be a Mayavadi. But whenever Srila Prabhupada would accuse him of being a Mayavadi, he would protest very strongly that he was a Vaishnava. But somewhere in there, he definitely had impersonal tendencies. And he really thought that the goal was liberation, moksha. So when Dr. Patel started to complain about how the devotees had lost all the bedding he gave them, Srila Prabhupada maybe stopped, put his cane in the sand, and he said that these devotees have realized, I am not this body. That realization which you want, they have, that I'm not this body. So they thought, what is the use of this mattress, pillow, mosquito net? I'm not this body. And Prabhupada said they were ready to live under any conditions, as long as they could be in the association of other devotees and serve Srila Prabhupada. They said, that realization that you want, aham brahmasmi, they already have. And therefore they don't care about these things. What does it matter if the body is healthy or sick? I'm not the body. And actually they used to think like that. They didn't take care. So, although with his own disciples, Srila Prabhupada would see the faults and point out the faults for the sake of correcting them and improving them, but with outside people, generally he would point out the good qualities and defend them. Then the last thing I remembered, the last incident I remembered when His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj was speaking, was about Srila Prabhupada's unique mission and unique contribution. And it so happened, around 1976, one publishing house called Orient Longmen approached me that they were going to bring out a book called Gurus, Godmen, and Good People, to be, I don't know, edited by Kushwant Singh, but they had decided that they wanted followers of each of the personalities to be described in the book to write the chapter about that particular person. And somehow I was in Bombay, so they asked me to write the chapter about Srila Prabhupada, and I was very happy to do so. So I wrote 20 or 30 pages, typed, and I sent it to Srila Prabhupada in Mayapur. And Srila Prabhupada appreciated it, but he gave one suggestion to be incorporated. And the suggestion summed up how he perceived his own mission or unique contribution. And he said that Indian culture was like a tulsi, a sapling of a tulsi, and that he had transplanted, just like you transplant a tulsi sapling from one place to another, he had transplanted the whole Vedic culture as it is from India to the Western world and throughout the whole world. And he said that when you transplant a sapling, you have to be very careful that no part of it is harmed or damaged, because it's very delicate. And he said that he presented the Vedic culture as it is, in toto, without damaging any part of it, without subtracting any part of it or adding any concoction to it. He presented the Vedic culture in toto as it is to the people of the West. And the people of the West accepted it as it is in toto. And that was Srila Prabhupada's unique contribution. So we should, as devotees of Srila Prabhupada, followers of Srila Prabhupada, as human beings, we should appreciate Srila Prabhupada's unique contribution, that he presented the Vedic culture in toto. And people accepted it in toto. I'll conclude with one little incident which I didn't think of earlier, but since it involves our neighbors in Chaupati, I will mention it. Around 1973, the chairman of Bharatiya Vidya Bhavan was Mrs. Leelavati Munshi. And a program was organized at Bharatiya Vidya Bhavan, how the problems of India and the world could be solved through Bhagavad Gita. And Mrs. Munshi had invited Srila Prabhupada, and she actually wanted him to be like to preside over the function for 3 days. But actually Srila Prabhupada was quite involved in Juhu, but he came for 1 day. And she invited Srila Prabhupada with the devotees to come before the program began for tea. So we went, and she was just amazed. She was just amazed how the devotees had completely adopted the Indian culture, the Vedic culture. And she kept asking, you know, how did you get them to shave their heads? How did you get them to wear dhoti and kurta? And the ladies, how did you get them to wear saris and other decorations? So it is a miracle. It is a miracle, actually. And it was only because of Srila Prabhupada's immense love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his immense compassion for the fallen souls that he could transform us so much. So we should very carefully preserve the legacy that Srila Prabhupada has given us. As he presented Vedic culture as it is, we should accept it as it is and present it to others as it is. As it is means as Srila Prabhupada presented it to us. And this is our sacred duty and responsibility to Srila Prabhupada and the whole world. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj ki jai.